Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In this final week of our conversation, Seven Wonders, Greg Meyer and Heidi Esposito help the folks gathered at the Minnehaha Falls Bandstand be present in that place. On the edge of Minnehaha Creek, near those famous falls, beneath a sunny sky but in the shade of tall old trees, it was a great setting to marvel at and engage the wonder of nature.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good to see you, meeting one another and saying hi. It's nice to have a friendly group of folks here. I'm Greg Meyer with Fabric, and just want to share some thoughts with you all. And so, where to start? A week or two ago, saw a video that was shot earlier this month off Kamano Island in offshore of Washington someplace. And there's a family in their fishing boat, you know, small, like 16-foot power boat, out there fishing, and all of a sudden they see an orca swimming up to them and obviously pull out their cell phone and watch it. Some of you have probably seen this. Not many people, but a couple million, you know. And this orca comes swimming up to them and, you know, comes up, you know, surfaces, like, wow, it was actually coming close, and swims under the boat and around it, and this is really cool. And then it starts, like, pushing the boat, getting up and pushing it, and then, not violently, but forcefully, and then starts turning the boat round and round, and curiosity is starting to degrade to what's happening to us. And this is going on and on. It actually goes on for a couple of minutes till the orca finally just swims away. Done, I guess, you know. And but what really caught me as I was processing what I wanted to talk to you about today was, at one point, the person with the camera, with the cell phone, shooting the video, says, why is it doing this? And it's really concerned, like curious, or actually almost accusatory type of voice. And my thought was, like, well, why do you do things like this? I mean, you see a pretty flower over there, and then you go and you maybe pick it and smell it and stick in your pelt or throw it away. I mean, you're curious. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you want to know something about it. Maybe you're wanting to interact with it. Maybe you wanted to show it to someone else, or you wanted to mess around with it just to figure out what it is, right? I mean, we do things like this. Or maybe you wanted to make contact. Maybe there was a reason, like, you know, I wanted to know something, or I want to play with it. And I, you know, nudge it around, try to push it, it won't play back. It just, what a boring thing that thing is. You know, obviously not a real form of life, and, you know, finally just swims away. What's interesting is we all experience nature. Everything experiences nature, whether it's a person or orca whale or these oak trees or the photons leaving the sun, striking, bouncing off me and hitting your eyeballs so that you perceive me. I mean, all of that is experiencing nature, all very, very differently. It's hard for us. We want tempted to interpret what other things are understand, but we all are experiencing nature. And what that experience tells us is that we live in this amazing and a wonderful and an infinitely interesting world. Nature just is an incredible place. So these weeks, we've been talking about seven wonders, and, you know, there were the ancient seven wonders that the Greeks came up with, and those are all human-made things. We've been talking about just things that are, you know, what are some of these wonderful, and obviously there's a lot more than seven, but we picked out seven, and that list would totally be incomplete if somehow we didn't just stop and say, this, I mean, wow. Right? I mean, just, Aaron had you do the story, but just stop and look, listen, smell, maybe you can feel it. And every time I hear those sparrows, touch the palm of one hand with the finger from the other hand. Can you hear the falls? Can you hear the creek? Leaves in the tree? Voices of people? plane? Do you feel the wind, breeze, maybe the sun, the warmth? Thousands of years ago, someone sitting on a hill east of the Mediterranean on a clear, calm night looked up and said, "When I look up into the heavens and I see the works of your fingers, the stars, the moon, I can't help but wonder, what are human beings that you're mindful of us, mortals, that you even care?" I mean, that awe, that humility of being a part of something as amazing and interesting and wonderful as we are is just such a privilege. And so, quickly, I want to talk about a couple of the wonders of this nature, this thing that we are experiencing right now. And, you know, I could easily start going into, we could look at particular species and animals and laws of physics and stuff like that, and we could talk for thousands of years about all that wonderful stuff, and they told me I don't have 1,000 years. So I want to talk about some really fundamental things that we just normally even skip over. All right, like the first wonder of this world is that nature exists. I mean, that it exists at all. I mean, there is something here, not nothing. Obviously, if there was nothing, we wouldn't be having this conversation about it right now. But we take that for granted. I mean, there is something here that we can see, that we can experience, that we can feel, and it has all this beauty and all this variety, all this stuff that you're sensing. That exists. And it doesn't have to, as far as I know. It doesn't have to, but it does. And while that is such a simple concept, you say, "Well, Greg, why even bother mentioning that?" Somehow I think we typically just skip over it. We just assume it is. And we all know what happens when we take for granted something that is truly a gift. That is truly a gift. This exists, and it is amazing. What exists is amazing, and it's interesting. It's wonderful. That's the first wonder that I want to talk about. The second one, after the fact that it exists, is that we exist. I exist, you exist. We're here, and we are perceiving this. We're experiencing it. We're thinking about it, delighting in it, and we have the option to appreciate it, and maybe even to care for it. I mean, again, so obvious, we exist. Yeah, we do, and we don't necessarily have to, but for some reason, we do. And that is an important touch point. And as I think about the fact that I exist and that I then have this opportunity to experience this, I count these things that are landing in my hand. Pretty simple. The third piece then, which I think comes right from that, that this nature exists, then we exist. The next one is this isn't just here. Okay, so it isn't, this world is not, or this universe, let's make this big enough, right? This universe isn't nature and us. No, it's just nature, right? I mean, we are part of it. Nature is everything. Everything from, you know, those photons coming from the sun that I talked about, to the chipmunk that I was watching going up and down that oak tree a little while ago, to the grass, the dry grass, the waterfall, to, I don't know, you name it, to the wood and the metal on the benches that you are sitting on. Even though those are processed nature, they are nature because they didn't come from anywhere else, all right? It's all nature. And here's the big piece of that is that we are part of that, not apart from it. This is a huge gift to us that we forget. We tend to set ourselves aside. We think, well, we're an exception to nature, or we're outside nature. We're users of nature. It's here for our convenience. We're the purpose of nature. No, we're part of it. And being part of something means to be connected to it, and that means to collaborate with it. And, you know, just for the record, being connected to nature is not the same thing as being a consumer of nature. So that's a different thing. So these wonders that we get this chance to experience, the fact that this exists, that we exist, and that we get to be part of it, not apart from it are pretty amazing. And Heidi's gonna help me. She's good at helping us drive some of this stuff home. Let's do something that helps us experience all this.
Yeah. How many of, is this your first time to Minnehaha Falls? Nice. Okay, there's a few. I understand there's probably tens of thousands of people that come here every year. And they generally go from the parking lot and they beeline to the main attraction, which is, of course, the falls, right? But from wherever they left their car to the falls, they pass an enormity of nature. So why do we go out from there to there and not even notice? It's because we need that practice. We need practice of noticing and observing. We need practice of what I would call the ABCs, and knowing that everything around us is A, amazing, and B, beautiful, and C, complex. And so we're gonna get a chance this morning to sort of practice those muscles. Everybody in? All right, that wasn't very enthusiastic, so let's try that again. Is everybody in?
Yeah.
All right, great. Okay, I'm gonna send you on a scavenger hunt. Now, I don't want
at this point, people found natural items around them that caught their eye, came back to the larger group where Heidi helped people pause and observe the items they found. Beyond that, she helped them cultivate some curiosity about, some gratitude for, and even some perspective from each little bit of nature. And then made space for people to create an impression of their items on a little disc of clay as a reminder of our connection to the natural world and the wonder of even tiny little mundane bits of nature and how they can hold such immense wonder within them. So here's Heidi again, and then Greg will wrap things up.
The other thing that I think leads us to walking past all these things that are natural and part of nature and that we're a part of is that we're human. And we absolutely need reminders, sometimes like right in front of our faces like that. Rosie, who's getting baptized in a bit, we use water as a way to remind us and to connect us to this ritual of baptism. And that's a reminder. When we use water, when we're in water, when we're playing in water, it's a drawing back to the way that we're connected to this community and the earth and to God and to our communities. So we're going to create a reminder for us to say that we are connected and a part of nature. And hopefully that will lead us to that knowing it's awesome and knowing it's beautiful and looking for the complexities of it. But one more thing I want you to wonder about as you're holding your item. And I want you to put yourself in the place of your item and think about, what is this space like from the perspective of your leaf or your stick or your rock? What did they experience this morning? Where did they come from? Did people trample on them as they got to their destination? Can they hear and listen to the chickadees and the rustling of the leaves? Maybe that chipmunk dropped it from the to the top of the tree onto the ground. But think about where it was this morning and what it experienced as well.
Yeah, so what did you guys make your impression of? Well, just yell it out. Acorn, a leaf. I saw a bunch of leaves going up, and a dandelion, a rock. What?
A feather.
Oh, a feather, right, yeah. So, you know, Heidi was actually way nicer to you than I would have been. My idea for that was, find something of nature to make this of, and the rule is you can't move your feet. Like, wherever you are right now, it's there. Because one of the things that we people have as we look at the world is that we think some things are cool and some things aren't, you know? And actually, it's all really cool. I mean, it's our perspective that dismisses things. It probably has more to do with familiarity than anything else. So there's this temptation to say, well, that's ordinary. I just walk by it. That's not flashy enough. So, you know, I just got this dumb acorn, but she found a blue jay feather, and that is so much cooler than my thing. No. You maybe like that more, and that's fine. You can like a blue jay feather more than an acorn. But which is actually more amazing? I mean, I want to see a blue jay feather make one of those things. You know, those big oak trees up there. It's not going to happen. I mean, everything, it's our perception of it. In fact, so there's this idea that, you know, some things are ordinary and some things are extraordinary, and we want the extraordinary things. But just think about those words. Ordinary, we know what that means, right? That's common. We see it a lot. We're familiar. Not a big deal. Extraordinary, that's special. But think about the word. It's extraordinary. I mean, if something is boring and something else is extra boring, it's more boring, right? So if something is ordinary and something else is extraordinary, it's just all the more ordinary. Because nature is ordinary. It is ordered. It is what it is. All right, everything comes from it. And the fact that we might see the beauty in it or not isn't because it is there or not. It's because how deeply have we looked? What have we considered about it? What is the function of this thing? Like that little limb that someone picked up, like how did it know where to grow, where it grew, and how did it know to carry the nutrients to and from the leaves to the trunk? And how was it made in such a way? I'm not pretending it has a brain, but how does it do that? How is it constructed in such a way that when its time is done, it releases and is able to fall to the ground and decompose where it fell so that it can begin to feed the microbes that are in the soil so that those will then feed the roots of the trees so that the tree will continue to grow? I mean, that little twig that you just didn't even bother to look at, that is amazing. So that is the fourth wonder. The first one is that it exists at all. Second is that we exist. The third is that we get to be part of. We are not apart from nature. And this fourth one is there's nothing boring in nature. Everything is amazing. It's all a matter of how close we look. And we have that opportunity to look and to discover and to see how great it is to be a part of all those sorts of things. And so there is no such thing as boring. Now, look around you at the people. Look in the mirror at yourself. There's no such thing as boring. There's no such thing as ordinary. There are no ordinary people here. There are only extraordinary people here. It's impossible to have anything else but that. Anyway, so that's fourth. The fifth one, and I'll be done. I'll let you go home. Well, almost home. The fifth one is really pretty simple, and it comes from this. But let me fill you in on it a little bit. So this planet that we're on, Earth, at one time was just a bunch of interstellar gas and dust with a lot of charged particles and stuff like that. And now it is this. It went from that to this. Yeah, it took some time, but it did that. It became this amazing place with now over, from a lifeless void to a planet with over 10 million scientists, say at least 10 million species, filling up every niche and ecosystem you can imagine on this planet. And somehow it got from that to this. You know, how did that ever happen? It's an amazing thing, but nature just keeps working at it. Now, you might be expecting me to say, well, that was God, right? You read the book of Genesis, and 6 days God said, let there be this, and let there be this, and all these things happen. I don't think that's what it says. I mean, yes, that is what those words say, but those writers of the book of Genesis, they had no intention of giving us the science or the history of how the world was created. They were using their poetic imaginations to try to help us understand our relationship to this world that we're in and to this, what we call God that created all things, so that we could begin to engage with that and grow with that and thrive in it and let it thrive around us. There was no intention there of being scientific about it. It's much more about symbolism than anything else. But so, you know, when you think about it, if you want to think about God's miraculous power, I mean, what could be more miraculous than that blue jay feather or the fact that the world has evolved to be what it is today? I mean, God is like we. God is not an exception to or different. When God acts, it doesn't have to interrupt the laws of physics. It actually God is part of. We don't discover God by looking beyond the world. We discover God by looking more deeply into the world and into each other. One of the amazing things then about this world going from interstellar gas to and dust to this is how that all happened. So this was a number of years ago, but there was a bioengineer on the Galapagos Island that would bring groups of scientists and engineers in to sort of teach them what, you know, they could learn from the world there. And she was giving a tour to these scientists and engineers, and one man who's a civil engineer was shaking his head, and she says, what's the question? And he says, well, this is all wonderful, all stuff you're talking about, but I work for a really big city. I'm in charge of the infrastructure for the city. Our biggest problem is all of the pipes carrying the water and the sewage are always calcifying and clogging up, and we have to figure out how to replace them. It costs our city millions of dollars every year. That's my real world problem. He says, I need a solution for that. The bioengineer reached down and picked up a seashell and said, nature solved your problem over 500 million years ago. This shell is all calcification, and this shell does it exactly where it wants, and it doesn't do it where it doesn't want it, and it does it without a lab technician or a work crew. And the guy was like, yeah, wow, you're right. I mean, how do we apply that to the pipes running to and from your house underneath the street? No one has quite figured that out. But the point here, what I'm trying to drive at is this is the fifth wonder of the world, is the nature figures everything out. In fact, the language that I would say is nature solves every problem. It solves every problem. And it doesn't have, you know, a lab or two or a dozen labs and a couple lab technicians or even hundreds of lab technicians. It has the entire world. There are millions and millions of experiments going on simultaneously, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day, solving all the problems so that we could go from nothing to everything. And it has done it seamlessly. And in order to figure out how it works and what experiments to duplicate and to continue and to try to improve on, it has a data gathering device called genetics that reports in on how it's going and whether this is viable or not. And we have this. Nature solves every problem. Yeah, it takes its time. It takes its time. But nature solves every problem. We think we are in control. We think we're the ones who know better. We're learned. But really, it's our relationship, being a part of, discovering, and investing in all of that. There's a catch to that. There's a catch to that. If nature solves every problem, one of our jobs as human beings and as individuals is to not be a problem, because nature will solve us. And that's not good. And that isn't a threat. That is simply saying the truth. And it isn't because God doesn't love us or God doesn't take care of us. God loves us by allowing us into helping us into showing us how to be part of the world, not apart from. God really is not able to love us when we insist on being apart from the world rather than part of it. So, closing, this living world, particularly the living world that we are a part of, it is suffering right now. And it's pretty clear it's more than anything else it's due to us. We are inflicting damage and pain on the world around us that faster than it can recover. And it doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to be the problem. We can be part of. It's going to change. We can help nature be better and be a better part of it. And from nature's perspective, better means two things. It means more abundant life and more diverse life. Those are the measures. If you look at how nature has grown from nothing to everything, it's always voting for more abundant life and more diverse life, because together that all works. And so if you need a measuring stick to help you see how can I be more of an asset to this world that I am a part of rather than a problem to this world that I am part of, I think the big question is, does my life, do my actions, is my being part of this world adding to that abundance and encouraging the diversity of the life that is here or not? And what can I do to have it be that way? I think that's what this is all about and how it all works. So the basic tool for that is simply our metaphor, at least that we use here a lot, is weaving. We're a fabric, and part of this fabric of the universe, fabric of existence that we are part of and woven into. I think the more deeply we weave our lives into that, the more abundance, the more diversity of life we help create, and the more we feel part of and cared for and sure of our place in that. So take this time and think about, how can I weave my life to be to help life be more abundant and more diverse in our world?
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can find other Fabric folks through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS, or find resources for discussions with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website. We also have live gatherings in the Twin Cities we'd love for you to be part of. Learn more at FabricMPLS.com.